Hey, welcome into Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan of Sports Talk 790. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, the haters will say Houston has a hater problem, but do they? We'll weigh in. Some dominoes fall in the Astros trade market. We'll discuss the implications there. And JV follows Fromber to Detroit. Should Houston have been on that? We'll discuss. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. So Buster only made some waves this week when he reported that Josh Hader has been throwing lightly off of flat ground and that he and the team hope to learn more about where he stands in his prep for the season by the middle of the week. Now, contrast that report with the update we received in November from Chandler Rome, in which Hader had thrown off the mound three times and was, quote, progressing well. Now he's back to flat ground, so the implications of that seem like it's a setback, but we don't know for sure. The team hasn't said anything. Hader's entering year three of that five-year, $95 million deal with Houston. He was having a brilliant 2025 season before being sidelined with a shoulder strain in mid-August and missed the remainder of the season subsequently. What's your concern level with this update regarding Josh Hader?
First pitchers and catchers work out of the spring Wednesday morning. The birds are chirping, the flowers are blooming, and Josh Hader, you can sit this one out and play a little catch on the side. It's a downer. I'm not going to straight up say ominous at this point, but certainly not encouraging that after an entire offseason, he's not ready to go. And at this point, you'd have to say he's not likely, which isn't saying he won't get there, but to be properly built up to start the regular season. Big hedge on that. He's a reliever, so he's building up to be available for an inning. You know, not build up pitch counts over starts during the spring to hopefully be ready to throw 90, 100 pitches the first time out. And if he's not ready to start the season, Brian Abreu's just fine as a closer relative to Josh Hader, but it's the trickle-down effect. If Hader's not there for the ninth, Abreu's the ninth, okay, Brian King the eighth, but then you're using lesser arms as you back up, getting bridges from starters to closers. But it ties into the fact that 5 years, $95 million for a closer was questionable to poor asset allocation before the ink was dry on the contract. And into all this, fellas, let's throw in, it's even year Josh Hader, right? 2020, not so good. 2022, terrible. 2024, his first season with the Astros. So that's one more chip in the negative column on this one. But it's still a full 6 weeks plus to opening day. But it'll be tick-tock. This will absolutely bear watching for a $19 million per season closer.
Yeah, this is not what you want to hear this time of year. I'm going to reserve being too concerned until, you know, we see how things are going down in spring training and they talk to guys and we hear what's going on for sure. But this is not good. Early in the year, you worry, is he going to be available when you need him in that first series against the Angels? Maybe not. And it's interesting with not even just baseball players, football players. Anytime a guy starts off the season banged up or coming off an injury, or you see it sometimes with holdouts in the NFL, you're always kind of like, I don't know about that, because that stuff usually leads to other injuries. So I hope that's not the case where Hader's kind of babying this shoulder injury along and starts to ramp things up, and then maybe a completely different body part has some issues. We see that happen all the time. And we saw with JP France, sounds like a very similar injury to Hader, but France's was significant enough to where he had to have surgery for it. So I don't know. It's been 6 months. You think Hader would be a little further along than this? So I'm certainly concerned because, well, it's the Astros, right? And it's injuries. And we know how last season went and how Houston's so quiet about all these things too. So Dana Brown spoke a few weeks ago that he thought Sousa and Hader were moving along okay and on their own plan, their own recovery plans, but he didn't really give you like, oh yeah, they're firing it up. And I remember when we were at media day for the Astros, they were talking about McCullers was throwing a bullpen. If McCullers is throwing a bullpen and Hader's only throwing on flat ground right now, that's not good.
All right, first metaphor of spring training. Think of it as you see a huge beehive, not terribly far away, but not super close. It doesn't mean they're all going to attack and sting the hell out of you, but you know things could go really wrong. So the longer we go before Josh Hader says, I'm feeling good, and he's hitting mid-90s on the gun, especially with 3 years, $57 million on the contract. But, you know, we're not even to the point where we'd say we thought we were out and they pull us back in to pitchers taking longer or injuries maybe being worse than first reported. But remember, he did miss the last, 7 weeks of the regular season. And Josh Hader, going back to his time before coming to the Astros, hey, no more than one inning per outing for me. He has shown wanting to be conservative with the moneymaker. The difference being, of course, he has the long-term money. He's not protecting himself ahead of becoming a free agent. So not the way you want to open spring training, but they're not condemned to losing him yet.
It does occur to me just quickly that Espada said recently that, hey, we don't want to Abreu and Hader having to go four outs early in the year, and we want to be protective of these guys early. Makes you wonder if Espada maybe knows a little something that we don't about how Hader is recuperating and his timeline, if he's already talking about trying not to use him too much early in the season. That just kind of occurred to me that sometimes 2 + 2 does equal 4.
To me, the concerning part isn't just Hader, but it's also that when Brian Abreu got moved to that closer role, he wasn't exactly lights out. Abreu's outings were always kind of scary because he has such a high walk rate. But when he moved into that closer role, he wasn't cleaning up those messes on the base paths that he had been as a setup guy. And the timing of this is interesting because this comes after the team had cleaned house based on injuries and aggravation of injuries and setbacks. It would be really concerning that following the supposed evaluation of return to play protocols, that there's an issue with a player returning to play possibly too early. So we have a lot of info on the Astros trade front. Before we get into that, let's work in a word for Nat Lapman at Cruise Planners. Nat's got a deal going on right now for Alaskan cruise and airfare package right now for two people. It's on the Norwegian Bliss, sailing from May 1st to 8th. Unlimited beverage package, yes please, specialty dining, shore excursion credit, prepaid gratuities, round trip airfare travel from IAH, and transportation to and from the airport. It's $4,600, $4,617, and that deal is exclusive through Nat Lapman. That's just one example. He's got deals sailing out of Galveston that are shorter if you want. He's got packages of all sizes of budget, and his prices are always guaranteed that if the trip goes down after you book, your cost is automatically adjusted. So give Nat or Jenny a call at 281-892-1150. Support the companies that support us. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Stone Cold Stros. It's Nat Lapman at Cruise Planners. So guys, we received significant updates on the Astros trade front, specifically that two of the teams that were identified as having legit interest in Esoc Paredes, the Red Sox and Pirates, both went out and got infielders this week. The Athletic reported that there had been a total of 5 teams aggressively pursuing Paredes, which would mean that if these two teams are now out of the market, there's still 3 remaining. But you wonder now at what level or interest or leverage that Houston now has, considering there's less competition. Given how this week has played out, do you guys think Esoc Paredes will be on the opening day roster?
As a yes or no question, I will guess yes, since maybe wouldn't really be an answer. If Dana Brown's trying to drive a hard bargain, no one has reason to cave. I mean, everyone in baseball knows the Astros are imbalanced. It's not that they have too many infielders. They have too many infielders to play at the same time. It's not like they have 4 all-stars and then a 5th guy who's really good. Right? Correa's level of play is a question mark. Altuve is a regular second baseman about to turn 36, a question mark. Christian Walker off his 2025 season about to turn 35, a question mark. Right? Jeremy Peña is the only guy who going into the season, I think you'd say, I have high confidence that he's going to be a well above average player at his position. If Paredes is relegated to a little here, a little there, maybe a little everywhere or elsewhere. If it's a directive from ownership, well, if we take a little less than we'd like in terms of player return, but we're going from a $9.35 million Esoc Paredes to a left-handed hitting outfielder who might not be named Willier Abreu, but still isn't even arbitration eligible, to just throw one name out there, no particular link on this, Matt Wallner of the Minnesota Twins, who hit 202 last season. But 22 home runs and 330 at-bats, home run rate higher than Paredes, actually relatively close in part-time play to Yordan Alvarez over the last 3 years. Walks at about a Paredes rate, strikes out at an ungodly rate. But I mentioned not even arbitration eligible to 2027. But would the Minnesota Twins be willing to take on $9 million of Paredes to play first base for them? So what's the match now that the Red Sox are definitely out of it, right? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, talked about him last week. That was utility guy. Well, getting Caleb Durbin, he is their third baseman or placeholder if Marcelo Meyer is ready to go. And Durbin can also play second base. But forget about Jaron Duran or Willy Abreu, looks like now, for the Astros.
Yeah, my guess is, because it'll upset me and I don't want it to happen, I think Paredes will not be on the roster. That's kind of where I'm going. We had Chandler Rome on the station just this week, and he thinks that regardless of what they say, the Astros are working to move Paredes. And you just got to have to, for me, I'm going to go along with that reporting. It's just not what I want to see. What has Christian Walker proven that he deserves at bats over Paredes? Nothing to me. I know that he's proven that the Astros owe him a lot of money still. That's fine, but it's not like Paredes is making league minimum or anything like that. Give me the better ball player. Give me the guy that's in his 20s. I mean, Walker did have a good second half last year, but he also had a poor overall season by his standards. That could just be the beginning for him starting to fall off. So I'd rather go with the young guy and try and match the at-bats earlier in the year, find a way to get guys in there. It makes me wonder, again, we always talk about Dana and Espada on the same page. When they made the trade for Correa, were they on the same page with what they wanted to do and how they viewed Walker? I'm not so sure, but to answer your question, Brandon, it's a pure guess. We don't know, but it sounds like Charlie mentioned, sounds like the Astros are really asking for a lot, and not just asking for a lot, but they want somebody that's as good as Paredes, but cheaper. And the Astros are kind of desperate. That's just what it sounds like to me. And they want him to be left-handed. I'm like, you have any other qualifications he has to be? I just worry that it's going to be tough for them to find exactly what they're looking for. And there's not a whole lot of time between now and the start of the season. We saw the Red Sox made their decision. A lot of teams are solidifying their lineups, and they're pretty much good with what they have, unless they get some kind of injury during the spring or somebody, I don't even want to say underperforms, because we know it's spring training, but if somebody just looks like they're overmatched, they don't belong on this level, maybe a team would make a decision. Maybe, you know, we need to go elsewhere to fill this spot, but I think it's going to be tough sledding for Dana Brown to get good value for Paredes. So that's why I wouldn't do it. I'd hold on to him.
Yeah, you do not trade him for 70 cents on the dollar of a baseball player, because you desperately have to move the money. They're only a few million below the tax, but they are below the tax. And Paredes, the player, is an asset. The Astros will be paying more than double the salary this year to Christian Walker at first base, to Carlos Correa at third base, than what Paredes makes. And despite missing a chunk of the season after he blew that hamstring, Paredes overall was a better player than either Walker or Correa last season. And he's several years younger than both of them.
Yeah, and I don't hate Dana for playing hardball, considering that Paredes is a good player, and getting rid of him means that you do need to count on Walker to play better and for Correa to put up season numbers at a higher clip than can probably reasonably expected. Is it crazier to do something out of the box and maybe try to see what Paredes could do in left field, or let $20 million ride on the bench?
Yeah, I'm sure they have the numbers cruncher metrics guys. Well, if we can calculate 40 starts for Paredes at first base and 30 at third and 25 at second and 20 at DH, hey, we're up to 105 starts for the guy. You know, some of it would shake itself out. First half, Christian Walker resurfaces. You get an injury. But the Astros don't have, if they trade Paredes, you know, one of the great infields in baseball on paper coming in to 2026. It's not career achievement lineup evaluations. What do you have based off the more recent past? So their great depth of infield, Paredes included, can become a weakness if you trade him and you get further fall off, or the performance of where Altuve and Walker were last season. That would not be a good right side of the infield. Between the two of them, you had about one total war. Altuve had a half and Walker less than one half win in value, just to use war as a metric. But, you know, it wasn't an optical illusion. Altuve, save the short 2020 COVID season, was the worst player he's been since 2013. He turns 36 in May. Christian Walker will be 35 before April Fool's Day. You know, you trade Paredes, it's at your own peril unless you're getting a real good return. This should not be a money-driven move. If it's balancing your roster because you're getting a good outfielder to fortify an outfield that's pretty much all question marks or just about all question marks, okay. But they do not need to clear money. That would be a very poor justification for moving Isak Paredes.
And just the optics would be awful. If they move Paredes and he continues to play like we've seen him play this past year, and Christian Walker does fall off, man, they are going to look so bad. And then after the Abreu thing too, and I thought Chandler brought up a good point that, yeah, it's Walker's not Abreu level to where he's killing you and you just can't play this guy every day. It's not like that. And Chandler also said there he thinks the Pirates thing isn't dead. There might be still a move there. But if I'm the Astros, like, you can't play scared. But it just, why double down on an older player who's already showing you he's regressing when you have a younger, better option already on your squad? It's not the way I would go. But the Astros make a lot of head-scratching moves like this where you're like, it's clear that this is not the same people making baseball decisions as it was several years ago.
If Christian Walker in 2026 would be the player for the season that he was post All-Star break last season, the Astros would be delighted with that. I mean, it's not like we'd be having visions of prime Jeff Bagwell, but 799 OPS is very good, solid production. But after the All-Star break, much less than half the season, right? With the break later now. So for much more of the season, Christian Walker was an atrocity as a first baseman, one of the worst everyday players in baseball. So the presumption that, well, he should be a 799 player for 2026. He could be. He was 800 OPS 2022, 2023, 2024. He was also 31, 32, and 33 years old then, as opposed to 35 now, coming off his worst season in about a half a decade.
I have a couple more questions on this. Before that, we've been talking about good uses of money. Charlie, if someone's looking for a good use of money and is looking for a good deal on a tractor or excavator, who should they contact?
A timely message then for Alvin Equipment. Proven quality for a long time. Three generations of a family-owned business going back to 1952. Also, Alvin Equipment, the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. So tractors and track loaders and zero-turn mowers and excavators. If it's a Kubota, Alvin Equipment has it in stock with low rate financing available. Right on Highway 6, well, actually just off of Highway 6. It'd be dangerous if they were on Highway 6. But they're an easy call at 281-331-3177. Also online at alvinequipment.com. Alvin Equipment, mention you heard them on Stone Cold Stros.
Yeah, that would be pretty dangerous to set up business, set up shop right in the middle of a freeway. Look, I want to do a thought exercise here as you guys are talking about it. Let's say Paredes doesn't get traded. Let's say he's on the opening day roster here, and this is their roster as it is. If I caveat it by saying that I can guarantee Yordan plays at least 100 games, but I can't guarantee he plays more. I can guarantee he plays at least 100 games. Which side of the ball are you most confident in, pitching or offense?
Oh, boy. I think so much rides on Imai and Burrows, among others, but I think they're the two biggest acquisitions behind Hunter Brown. With Hader status up in the air, but if you're going to give me a mostly healthy Yordan and Paredes is on the team, a slight lean offense? I feel silly a little bit as I say that, but that might just be me.
No, it's a good question, Brian. I had to think about it too. I guess because it is close, I'm going to lean pitching because the Astros developed that better. They coach that better. So I don't feel like they have to get the most prized players to accomplish their goals with the pitching staff. Whereas on the offense, you better be a big name on this team or we can't count on you for much.
Let me narrow the tunnel on this one. Okay. Opening day, let's say it's Yusei Kikuchi for the Angels pitching against the Astros. Left-handed pitcher. Who's not in the Astros lineup opening day?
That's interesting. Well, the reason why I brought that up is
because I'm in left field opening day at Daikin Park, Joe Espada aside, and Paredes is my DH.
Yeah, and it's why I brought it. I know I was a curveball, no pun intended, but I agree with Josh for the same reasons. I feel like just because we've seen the coaching get more out of the pitching staff. Now, granted, there's a lot. You're going to put that to the test this season because outside of Hunter Brown, there's question marks. I mean, you hope Christian Javier bounce back. You hope Ime acclimates to the majors, but you still have to see it. One more question, one more thought exercise rolling off of this, because as you guys were talking about this, it's kind of got my brain going on this. Do you think the challenges that this team faces right now, do you think the first domino of this goes all the way back to that offseason between 2022 and 2023 in which the front office had no GM and they signed Abreu and Montero to those unfortunate deals? Do you think these are still the ripples of those decisions?
Well, post Abreu, they added Christian Walker, which some might say is throwing bad money after bad money. Montero was never more than their number three reliever. So it's not like they signed a closer to $20 million per and he was a mess. Though Hader's $19 million and he's had one partially really good year. And now we're in season three. Who knows what you get? I think it will be the flashing beacon, Brandon, if the Astros are not back in the playoffs or don't rapidly reclaim American League West dominance, that people will say, yeah, there was the clearest sign that the empire was crumbling.
I think it's definitely you're going to see the ripple effect. And I don't even go completely after Christian Walker, even though he's a part of it. It's Bagwell. What other teams prioritize paying big money to bring in first basemen that are good defensively, that are great hitters, that are in their mid-30s? Smart analytic baseball teams don't fill first base with overpriced, expensive veteran guys. That's just not how you do it. You don't have to be that great a defender. They could teach you first base. It really is like that movie Moneyball for pretty much every other team. But the Astros keep doubling down and insisting on paying somebody with some pedigree at first base when you don't really have to do that anymore. And I felt Christian Walker's defense fell off last year. And I think that's going to continue as he ages. So I definitely think we're still living in that post, hey, fire your GM. We can do this ourselves. We have Jeff Bagwell. He can tell us what to do. And I think that's still going on some level.
But bigger than that, I would say, is that the Astros are at a full decade now of not having taken a player in the first or second round who's become even a decent major leaguer. You're not going to hit on all your high draft choices. And obviously, they got Jeremy Pena in round three and Hunter Brown in round five. Killer selections. But a decade with nothing out of the first or second round, poor selections, picking low in the first round, second round during this fabulous run, or what was fabulous run, depending on your point of view. 2 years of first and second round picks forfeited because of the sign stealing scandal. But as we've talked about within recent weeks with all the farm system rankings and that, the Dodgers pick low every year also, and their farm system's in great shape, and they still generate major leaguers, or as the Astros did when their farm system was still rated pretty highly, not necessarily guys who went on to do anything, but guys who were perceived as big-time enough prospects to be that trade capital that enabled them to deal for Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole and Zach Greinke. They have nothing like that now. They couldn't come in with the winning offer for Brendan Donovan.
In looking at this in perspective, we were a little spoiled. You know, teams don't have such long stretches of dominance the way Houston did. So our perspectives are a little off relative to other teams. You expect up and down years. But going from that long dominant ALCS appearance run to going back-to-back seasons where you don't have a single playoff win and one season that didn't have a playoff appearance, it just seems like, as I'm tracing this back, it just seems like that was the first domino to fall, because everything after that seemed to be patchwork that was making up for poor judgment in subsequent years. Moving on from the infielder surplus and the trade market to free agency, for anyone hoping for one last hoorah with Justin Verlander and a Astros uni, those dreams were dashed this week as JV returns to where it all started in Detroit on a one-year, $13 million deal. I think it's understood that JV on this team that has a bunch of guys fighting for the last two spots in the starting rotation is a luxury. especially when you have, you're trying to figure out like what you're doing on the offense. So that being said, what was your reaction to the news? And do you think the Astros missed out on a feel good story by not bringing back JV to help solidify the back end of that rotation?
I'm not going to say missed out. Guy, 43 years old, opening day, kind of like Christian Walker, was absolute stink bomb to the All-Star break and then turned it around. Verlander was excellent down the stretch for a Giants team that was not in contention, and pitching his home games in an excellent pitcher's park. So I think that the feel-good stuff's much more so in Detroit. If this doesn't clinch, he'll be going into the Hall of Fame in a Tigers cap if that decision hadn't been made already. He makes sense there. Geez, are Colin McHugh and Brad Peacock sitting by the phone? Hey, AJ Hinch, give me a call. Framber Valdez and now Justin Verlander to the Tigers, who have seemingly made the decision after losing to Skubal in arbitration 1 year, all in, paying him $32 million and then giving Framber $38 million. You're like, deferrals be darned. Verlander, 11 of the 13 deferred. It's still going to count about $10 million on the books. So the Tigers have surged to near tax level. And Verlander, you know, if he's a fourth, fifth starter, they have Skubal and Framber 1-2. They have Jack Flaherty, who makes $20 million. They have a solid young back rotation guy in Casey Mize. They have one of the best young talents in the game, Jackson Joe, probably coming back the second half of the season. So the burden on Verlander is not going to be much. The familiarity with Detroit, I'm sure he'll be welcomed as the conquering hero returning home. And heck, I thought the Framber move made the Tigers the single most likely team in the American League to make the postseason this year. Adding Verlander, I don't think moves the needle as much because you're not going to project him to go 180 innings. But if you're Detroit, if you're a Tiger fan, I'm sure you're stoked, and not just for the nostalgia of it.
Yeah, he could have another very good season. I've talked to it on podcasts. I know he's not Nolan Ryan, but Nolan Ryan had a lot of very good seasons into his 40s. So there is a precedent, and they do have some similarities. But I'm disappointed just because of the deferred money thing. And I know you talked about the balance tax, and the Astros don't want to go over it. And so that probably had a lot to do with it. But just seeing $2 million base for Verlander, and at the end of the day, him, Ryan Weiss, Eric Geddy, McCullers, I feel better about Verlander than any of those guys.
Not the highest bar in the world.
No, but that's what they would need him for, right? Back of the rotation. Yep. And they said they wanted to roll with six, but we'll see. We'll see if he can hold up.
And Verlander will start collecting that deferred money right about when he's Social Security eligible. Nice pension plan.
Absolutely. No, for sure. And I think it would have been an awesome story to see him back. And it doesn't make sense for all the reasons that we've said. But should the Astros get off to a medium or slow start, it still would have been a nice draw. You know, they regained a little bit of that star power bringing back Correa. But JV's a future Hall of Famer, and he's appointment viewing every time he pitches. And I think that's just a draw that's hard to account for from a financial standpoint. But obviously, they have much more imperative financial issues to touch on.
If you were a third team, would you rather, just for 2026, would you rather have Tatsuya Imai at 18 mil or Justin Verlander at, we'll call it 10 with the deferred?
Mm-hmm. I'd go Imai because of the upside.
Yeah.
Me too.
But yeah, it's all same. Potential.
And so that's where the Astros took their big pitching shot. So I don't think anyone should be racked with regret. Oh, it should have been JV Act 3.
As we're talking about Hall of Famers, Charlie, who's a Hall of Famer for providing heavy equipment?
I didn't know there was such a Hall of Fame, but let's induct Alvin Equipment. Opened for business in 1952, three generations family owned. If it's a Kubota, Alvin Equipment has it in stock and with low rate financing, the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. So obviously it's not an everyday type need, but if you have need for a tractor, a zero turn mower, a compact truck loader, an excavator, Alvin Equipment. Highway 6 address, call 281-331-3177. Online, they're at alvinequipment.com, and let them know you heard it on Stone Cold Strohs.
Indeed. Final thoughts before we're out the door.
Spring training's here. We've made it through another offseason, and I know there's not a broad giddiness of anticipation for the 2026 Astros. It'll probably be their least anticipated season for a decade. Well, you know, maybe they turn out to be a surprise positive. And while there has been obvious erosion, they won 89 and 87 games the last two seasons. The 2021 playoffs, the Astros beat the Chicago White Sox. 2022 playoffs, they beat the Minnesota Twins. Look at those two franchises just 4 and 5 years later. The Astros, you know, they're not the mighty, unstoppable force, but they're still chugging. Let's hope the chug doesn't peter out in 2026.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see Correa back with the ball club for a full year after leaving. I never thought we'd see him back with the Astros. So I'm just hoping that he plays well. I'm hoping that we're not saying like, oh man, Paredes would have been so much better at third base. Why did they do that? I'm hoping Carlos lives up to what I think he can. So hopefully it's a bounce back year for him and hopefully many to come, because no trade clause, moving him over to third base. He's going to be here for a while and hopefully he's awesome and maybe found that power stroke again, working the Crawford boxes.
Yeah, we talked about in recent episodes how this offseason might be one of the most important in the franchises, considering the trajectory of the last two seasons and how do they address all these concerns and the roster. It's interesting that we're at pitchers and catchers reporting now, and we still really can't dole out a grade on this offseason because the one hanging chad out there is still, what do they do with Paredes and what's the return on that? Or does he go, and how do they juggle the lineup if it is what it is? So just interesting that we are about to hit into spring training and we can't grade it. So I guess maybe Dana can say the dog ate his homework. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, please subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.